domestic conflict to a swift conclusion. This war is a dreadful burden upon us all. But I have complete faith that the Jedi will not long let our suffering continue."
Under cover of the thunderous applause that followed, Bail leaned a little sideways.
"He gets more and more inspirational, doesn't he?"
Startled out of reverie, Padme turned.
"What? I'm sorry, Bail, I was thinking."
"Not still brooding about that deal with the Hutts, are you? Because it's done, and we can't undo it."
She shifted her attention back to the Senate Hall, where their fellow representatives were disembarking from their platforms, streaming into the honeycomb of passages behind.
"I know," she said shortly, "but I still regret it. The Hutts are criminals and slave traders, trafficking in misery to make themselves rich. They don't care who they hurt, who they maim, who they kill. They'll do anything, no matter how heinous, if they think it'll gain them an advantage or fill their coffers. They'll help us today and double-cross us tomorrow if there's a better profit to be made."
"But if doing a deal with them keeps the Outer Rim hyperlane safe from the Separatists, well, I mean, we can't afford to lose any more. We need those hyperlanes, Padme."
She sighed.
"I know that. And the Jedi wouldn't have brokered the deal if there'd been another choice. This alliance offends them as much as it offends me. Nobody is more aware than they are of the suffering the Hutts cause."
He considered her.
"There's not much you don't know about the Jedi, is there?"
"I wouldn't say that," she said, blushing. "I've just had a little more to do with them than most people, that's all."
She certainly had, he knew. Fighting with them on Naboo? On Geonosis? She was practically an honorary Jedi herself.
"I suppose your experiences have given you a unique insight into them," he said thoughtfully.
"Which is good. You can translate. Because I think the rest of us just find them a little strange."
"Strange?" she said, indignant. "They're not strange, Bail. They're brave and resourceful and..."
"Well, well," said a drawling voice. "Look at you two, cozy as can be. What have we here, then? An impromptu meeting of the Security Committee? Where are your colleagues? You two mustn't do all the work, you know."
It was Palpatine, drifted over to them in his official platform. Alone now, Mas Amida must have bustled off to take care of more administrative detail.
"Chancellor," said Padme, standing. No, we were just chatting."
Bail, standing with her, nodded. "About the Jedi," he added, "and how much we owe them."
"Yes, indeed," said Palpatine, enthusiastic. "A debt I hope someday to repay in full. Well, I shan't interrupt any longer. It's getting late, and I have things to do."
"Late?"
said Padme, as Palpatine drifted away. She looked at their platform's chrono.
"Oh, no. I'm late. Bail, I'm sorry. I have to go."
"Yes, of course, go," he said, bemused by her sudden alarm. "I'll see you..."
But he was talking to thin air. For a dignified woman, she could certainly run when she needed to.
"Ah, well."
Grinning to himself, he departed the hall for his senatorial office, where a mountain of data pads awaited his attention.
Chapter 5
Mace Windu leaned forward in his Jedi Council chair, elbows on his knees, hands loosely clasped between them.
"And you're convinced that this request is genuine?"
Obi-Wan nodded.
"Yes, I am."
He looked at each Jedi counselor currently resident in the temple, Yoda, Oppo Rancissus, and Saisi Tin, then back to Mace Windu.
"I trust Dex implicitly. If you recall, it was his information that led us to Kamino."
"Any hint did he give you, Obi-Wan, of what he has learned?"
asked Yoda, his eyes half-lidded and intent.
"No, Master Yoda. He wouldn't risk divulging any details as we were speaking over an unsecured comlink."
"Then whatever he knows, he thinks it's dangerous," said Mace Windu. "Which means meeting with him might also be dangerous, especially if this is some kind of trap."
Obi-Wan considered him.
"He has changed since Geonosis," he thought. "Dooku's defection to the dark side has changed him,
and the deaths of so many Jedi whom he could not protect. I have never known him so cautious, so suspicious, so willing to see danger in every shadow.
Master Windu, if you're suggesting that Dex would betray me, I must respectfully disagree. The Jedi have no greater friend.
The counselors exchanged swift glances, then Mace sighed. What do you think, Master Yoda?
That in these dark times, no offer of help can we afford to ignore, replied Yoda, frowning. Victorious we were at Christophsis, but defeated we have been at Salonia, Gerida, and Garros IV. Another victory do we quickly require. Meet with Dexter Jetster you will, Obi-Wan, But precautions you will take, in case Master Windu's suspicions prove correct.
Obi-Wan bowed. Yes, Master Yoda.
Go now, said Mace Windu. The sooner we know what your friend has discovered, the better. Another swift exchange of looks between the Jedi Masters.
Obi-Wan felt a shiver of apprehension.
Has something happened? Something new?
Yoda sighed.
Word we have just received, Obi-Wan, that another hyperlane has fallen to General Grievous.
Obi-Wan felt the name run through him like a lightsaber. Grievous. Part machine, part sentient, all murdering monster. Sworn to the destruction of the Republic.
The Jedi.
That makes 3 in the last month, said Mace Windu. It's very bad news.
Bad? It was devastating.
Which lane this time, Master? Obi-Wan asked.
The Treble Nexus connecting Bespin, Kessel, and Mon Calamari.
So supplies of Tabana gas and Kessel spice are jeopardized, which will lead to civilian suffering once the shortfall of supply is felt, and those Mon Calamari who are driven home to spawn will not be able to answer the ancient compulsion.
Obi-Wan frowned. A bold move, tactically ingenious, and unspeakably cruel.
Perfectly in character for Count Dooku and his henchmen.
Above all things, a Jedi Master was serene, never overruled by strong emotions. That was the ideal. But Obi-Wan sensed a sourness ripple through the Force as the Jedi Council recoiled from that name. The echoes caused by Dooku's willing fall were a long way from fading. He bowed.
Masters, I'll find Dex and report back to you as quickly as possible.
He headed to the Temple Docking Bay complex and signed out a plain, serviceable city bike, one guaranteed not to attract undue attention. He couldn't help thinking what Anakin would say if he could see the dull brown paintwork, the dents, the scattered spots of rust.
That heap of junk, Master?
He'd demand, outraged and horrified.
You're going to scoot about Coruscant on that piece of junk? Where's your pride? You're a Jedi. This isn't right.
10 years in the temple, and still Anakin hadn't outgrown his passion for machinery, or fallen out of love with beautiful speed. Probably he never would.
Pride has no place in the heart of a Jedi,
Obi-Wan said aloud, earning a quizzical look from the requisitions droid on duty as it handed him the bike key.
The machine is functional, which is all I require.
Fully functional, yes, said the droid. That's correct, Master Kenobi. Please be so kind as to return it that way this time.
Obi-Wan touched 2 ironical fingers to his forehead.
I'll do my best.
Emerging from the docking complex's artificial brightness into the sunlit Coruscant morning, he waited in hover mode until he was given entry to the pitiless slipstream of traffic that would lead him in circuitous, circumspect fashion to the Galarb district. That was where Dex presided over his profitable diner, a slovenly and benevolent dictator. He felt slightly foolish, not selecting the most direct route, instead heading obliquely across the cityscape, virtually going in the opposite direction from his intended destination. But Yoda had told him to take precautions, so he did. It was for that reason he'd taken a city bike. Anyone who knew him knew he much preferred tackling Coruscant's traffic in an airspeeder. City bikes were so exposed. No undercover separatist thinking to follow him from the temple, such an unlikely thought, would pay attention to this battered old bike. And to make doubly certain he wasn't recognized, the hood of his cloak was tugged well down over his face. But even if these precautions failed, and some nefarious individual did try to follow him, without question, he'd be able to sense them before they could cause him any mischief. I'm in no danger, he thought. We're allowing ourselves to become unsettled, that's all. Therein lies the true danger. We must resist the temptation to give our enemies such power. Except, Dex had clearly been nervous, and that was an unsettling thought all by itself. The city bike's transponder beeped, signaling his acceptance into the traffic. Thrusting aside this new, niggling worry, Obi-Wan swooped into the slipstream of private airspeeders, public transports, city bikes much grander than his own, barges and chopters and runabouts and maxi-taxis, and was compelled to admit, in the privacy of his own thoughts, as he gunned the engine just a little, feeling the cool wind in his face and tugging on his cloak, that even though he did miss Anakin, there was a certain seductive freedom in speeding through Coruscant's crowded sky with no life depending on him but his own.
Obi-Wan!
Dex shouted, spying him through his diner's kitchen hatchway. The Besalisk tossed aside his wiped-down cloth and emerged into the service area, all four mighty arms spread wide, ready to envelop him.
Hey, buddy, what are you doing down here? I thought you were too grand for the likes of us in Coco Town.
Bemused, Obi-Wan stared at him. Too grand, Dex? I'm sorry, I don't quite...
That's right! Didn't you know it? You're famous now!
Vast belly quaking, Dex turned to his breakfast customers like a conductor to his orchestra.
Hey, everyone! Recognize this guy? You must have seen him on the HoloNet. His ugly face is everywhere! This is Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi, the hero of Christophsis, and before that, Geonosis, and Anoth. Come on, you mooches! A round of applause!
Good-naturedly enough, Dex's ragtag collection of loyal breakfast patrons abandoned their meals and mugs to snort and whistle and clap and slap their flippers on the tables. Obi-Wan bowed awkwardly. Well, this isn't exactly the low-key welcome I was expecting, he thought. And then he grunted hard as Dex crushed his ribs in an enthusiastic hug.
Play along, his friend whispered. You never know who's watching.
Play along. All right, he could do that. What am I doing here? He said as Dex released his suffocating hold and stepped back. I've come for a cup of the best chava-chava in all Coruscant. Dex laughed, a rich, infectious sound. But beneath his joviality ran a tight thread of fear.
Is that right?
He grinned at his curious patrons.
Hey, I thought you Jedi types weren't allowed to lie, hmm?
Blast. What was Dex playing at? Oh, he said and conjured up an embarrassed smile. All right, you've caught me out. The truth is, I didn't think to check the power cell charge levels on my city bike. I'm afraid it was either land here so you could give me a spare, or crash. Dex's patrons snickered and giggled and made kindly rude comments in a handful of different tongues.
I take it all back, Obi-Wan, said Dex, making up to the crowd. You're not a hero. You're a rollicking noski.
An idiot. That was nice. Look, I hope you don't mind, Dex, but I've parked the wretched bike out front. Another gravelly laugh.
No, I don't mind, so long as you pay the fine if an inspector notices it.
Yes, of course, no need to worry about that. But I don't wish to get you into trouble, so... about the power cell? Dex hitched up his sagging trousers.
Oh, sure, I can spare you a power cell, Obi-Wan. But do you mind waiting a little while? I'm still a bit busy.
Of course, Obi-Wan said, all good-natured courtesy. I'll stand outside with the bike just in case an inspector happens by.
Good idea,
said Dex, the genial host.
Take a rest from your heroics, and I'll be right with you.
By the straightest line, the Galarb District's Cocoa Town was some 49 sectors distant from the temple. The diner was located near the area's main transport hub, which guaranteed Dex a steady stream of hungry customers. Pedestrians and ground cars flowed past without a break, heading to and from the main transport interchange. Multi-story buildings towered all around the strip, but the diner itself sat in full sunshine, offering a panoramic view across the city planet. Obi-Wan lounged against the diner wall, enjoying the sunshine and idly perusing the faces of the passers-by. It wasn't long, however, before he realized he was being perused in return. And not just perused, recognized, pointed at, whispered about, double-talked and noticed. Because, just like Dex said, he was a hollow-net star now. It was all Palpatine's fault. An inevitable result of the Supreme Chancellor's relentless drive to put faces to the names of the Jedi fighting for the Republic's survival. A drive that had culminated in the continuous looped reporting of the war via the Holonet News Service. And since the Jedi were playing such a prominent role in the conflict... Yoda and Mace Windu had spoken forcefully against the notion, but Palpatine had been charmingly obdurate. The Jedi were heroes of the Republic, selflessly fighting in the name of peace. People should know this. Besides, only by making the Jedi known to every sentient on Coruscant in the whole Republic could they be sure of consolidating the groundswell of support for the fight against the Separatists.
"People cannot love an abstract," Palpatine had said. "But thanks to the Holonet, they will come to love the Jedi. Masters, you must trust me. In this matter, I know precisely what I'm doing."
Yoda and Mace Windu had not conceded the argument, but somehow it had happened anyway. And as a result, Obi-Wan Kenobi had lost his comfortable anonymity. Acutely aware of the attention he was attracting, he flipped his hood back over his face and tried to vanish within the Force. Unfortunately, it didn't help much. He could still hear the whispering, the sound of feet slowing on the sidewalk as gawkers stopped to stare. "This is ridiculous," he thought. "I should have insisted Dex meet me at the temple." In the faint hope that he could avoid further notoriety, he turned his back to the sidewalk and ground car strips and began tinkering with the perfectly functional city bike. A few moments later, a droid joined him, wearing a diner cap and carrying a fresh power cell and a clunky, battered toolbox.
"Dex says you need these," it said.
He nodded. "Yes, I do, thank you. Just put them down where you are."
"Sorry,"
said the droid.
"Dex says they do repairs around the back."
Away from passers-by where there was a hint of privacy. "Oh, of course." He guided the city bike to the rear of the diner, the droid clattering along behind him. It dropped the toolbox and the power cell on the ground and returned to work. After a swift check of the surrounding buildings, no eavesdroppers within sight or sensing, Obi-Wan opened the toolbox and shook his head at its contents. A kind thought, to be sure, but since Dex's hands were at least four times the size of his own, he used the Force to help him swap out the power cells. A twist here, a nudge there. The Force's might whispered through him, familiar as breathing. Sunk just below the surface of his surroundings, as he worked, he became abruptly, acutely aware of Dex's tightly coiled unease. Besalisks weren't Force opaque like Hutts and Toydarians, but they weren't as easy to read or manipulate as were so many other of the galaxy's inhabitants. Obi-Wan had long since accepted that, extreme circumstances aside, he'd never truly know what Dex was feeling, unless Dex was comfortable with him knowing it. Right now, though, Dex wasn't blocking him, and he wasn't consciously projecting either. Instead, he was leaking, an unpleasant muddle of fear and disbelief oozing out of him like a noxious psychic sweat. Without warning, Obi-Wan felt a shiver run through him, sickeningly familiar. "I have a bad feeling about this," he thought. But he couldn't pinpoint its source. Yoda was right. The dark side swirled around them like rancid fog. All he knew for certain was that his instincts, his intuition, his link with the Force, were driving him to leap to his feet and stare around him, hand on the hilt of his lightsaber, expecting trouble, expecting...
"That's the breakfast rush over," said Dex's strained voice behind him. "I got a minute or three for you, Obi-Wan. Then I have to get back to the kitchen."
Releasing a hard-held breath, deliberately relaxing his hold on the lightsaber, Obi-Wan turned to face his friend. Was all of this elaborate setup really necessary? Dex's deep-set eyes crinkled shut, then opened wide. His throat pouch bellied, a sure sign of annoyance.
"And when was I in the habit of wasting your time, Master Kenobi?"
Chastened, Obi-Wan nodded. "A fair point, I'm sorry, Dex. I hate to admit it, but I'm a little on edge." Leaning against the diner's smooth back wall, Dex reached into his cook's apron pocket, pulled out an Ambrian cheroot and a striker, and lit up. He inhaled deeply, then breathed out the fragrant pink herbal smoke.
"Christophsis was bad, eh?"
Obi-Wan snorted. "What makes you think so? By all accounts, the HoloNet news footage was positively stirring." Dex squinted, considering him.
"And so it was. I think they filmed it somewhere on Alderaan with a holovid company supplying the special effects."
Obi-Wan stared. "Since when were you such a cynic?"
"War brings out my better nature," said Dex,
and stubbed out the butt of his cheroot on the diner's dumpster. "Not this time it doesn't. The footage was real enough, Dex. Those blasted droid cams were everywhere we turned. But I suspect what ended up being broadcast was heavily edited." Edited so the only death and destruction people saw was the death of droids. The destruction of fear. Slaughtered clones weren't... photogenic.
"Of course it was,"
said Dex, his cynicism still richly flowing.
"I don't entirely disagree with the decision, you know," Obi-Wan said gently. "The edited footage didn't lie, after all. We were victorious. Eventually. But what's the point of frightening people? The core worlds must remain calm and stable. You know that. Panic is contagious and it spreads fast. If we let it take hold in the heart of the Republic, a great many people could be hurt. Even killed."
"That's true enough," Dex admitted. "But if you make this war too neat and tidy, Obi-Wan, could be folks won't mind how long it lasts. Then again, maybe it's different for you Jedi, being as how you're warriors and all."
Stung, Obi-Wan shook his head. "That's not fair. We didn't ask for this conflict. It was thrust down our throats so hard we nearly choked. But we can't not fight. The Separatists are willing to use the most brutal tactics imaginable to force separation on planets that have no desire to leave the Republic. They must be stopped." Sighing gustily, Dex nodded and scratched his chin.
You're right. Don't mind my crotchets, Obi-Wan. Seems you're not the only one on edge."
"You said you had some important information, Dex," Obi-Wan prompted.
"You'd best get on with swapping out that power cell," he replied, "just in case we are being watched."
"We aren't," Obi-Wan said, but he went back to tinkering.
"Dex, what's going on?" Dex reached for another cheroot, lit it, inhaled. This time he swallowed the smoke. He rubbed a hand across his face.
"Could be, maybe. I know where you can lay your hands on that piece of Chizik Grievous."
Obi-Wan stared at him, heart racing. "Destroy Dooku's pet general, and the war will be three-quarters won," he thought. "Where, Dex? Where is he?"
"Right now?"
Dex grimaced.
"Don't know, but I know where he might be in the next little while."
"Might be, Dex?"
"Intelligence isn't a sure business, Obi-Wan,"
said Dex, temper simmering.
"If you've come for guarantees, you've come to the wrong place."
"I'm sorry, but Yoda and the other masters are going to ask me. I have to be able to say I asked you."
Dex puffed furiously on his second cheroot.
"They don't trust me?"
"They don't know you. It's not quite the same thing."
With a final twist and a click, Obi-Wan connected the replacement power cell. Standing, he unkinked his back, then plucked the cheroot from Dex's fingers. You really ought to stop smoking these. They're not good for you. He dropped the herbal on the ground and pulverized it beneath his boot heel. Now, about Grievous. Defiant, Dex pulled out a third cheroot and lit it.
There's a whisper come to me,
he said, wreathed in a cloud of pink smoke.
Grievous plans on capturing Bothoe.
Bothoe, home to the Bothans, whose intelligence-gathering skills were legendary. Information was their greatest currency, and already their assistance had made a difference against the Separatists. Losing Bothoe to Grievous would make the stolen hyperlanes look trivial.
Let him be wrong, Obi-Wan thought. Let it be a mistake. Dex, are you sure about this?
My sources, said Dex. And she's not new at this game.
And you trust her? Which was a polite way of asking, is she a liar? Dex's hands clenched.
I trust her.
So, not a liar. He didn't bother asking for the source's name. He and Dex might be friends, but the Besalisk was fiercely protective of the beings who fed him their dribs and drabs of information. What you don't know, you can't tell, was his stubborn motto. And who was to say he was wrong? The Jedi had long since learned such wisdom the hard way. Do the Bothans know what Grievous plans? He asked, then shook his head. They must, they're Bothans. But why haven't they told us? Why haven't they...
They don't know, said Dex.
His eyes were cloudy, a sure sign of his deep concern.
There's a good chance I'm the only one who does, me and my source. And now you. It was an accident she found out, and she only risked telling me to pay back a life debt. Obi-Wan.
Dex's voice had dropped to a whisper.
You Jedi can't let Grievous get his metal hands on Bothoe.
No, they could not. And now he understood why his friend was so afraid, why he'd refused to discuss this over a comlink. With such a prize at stake, the merest hint that this plan might become common knowledge would surely see Grievous slaughtering thousands to stop one. What else can you tell me, Dex? When is Grievous expected to make his move? What size battle group will he take to the Bothan system? Can we expect...
I'm sorry, Obi-Wan,
said Dex, spreading all four arms wide.
I don't know. If I did, I'd tell you.
I know you would. Obi-Wan ran a hand over his beard. Dex, thank you for this. The Council will be most grateful. We owe you the debt of many lives. Dex sighed. Suddenly, he looked weary and years older.
I wish I could tell you more, Obi-Wan, but I can't, so you'd best go. I've got the lunch crowd to think about, and you've got an invasion to stop.
Somehow, Obi-Wan managed to smile. Are you quite sure you wouldn't like to change jobs? Dex's answering smile was equally strained.
Obi-Wan, old buddy, not for 100 million credits.
They embraced, quickly, two comrades in arms saying farewell on the eve of battle. Or at least, that was how it felt. Stepping back, Obi-Wan looked up into Dex's somber face. I doubt I'll be on Coruscant for much longer. Even if I'm not involved in finding and stopping Grievous, there will be other engagements. The Separatists are merely catching their breath after Christophsis. The fighting will start again, perhaps within days. He smiled. So, keep the chava-chava hot for me, yes? Dex nodded.
And a seat empty, old buddy. May the Force be with you.
And with you, Obi-Wan replied. Then with a sober nod, he slung his leg over the city bike, kicked it into life, and shot into the Coruscant sky without looking back. Abandoning circumspection, pushing the city bike as hard as he dared, and exploiting without shame the special traffic privileges afforded him as a Jedi, he took the most direct route back to the temple. dodging and darting his way through the endless streams of traffic, plunging from one lane to the next, ignoring the shouts and horn blasts from those whose right of way he arbitrarily usurped. All he could think of was the implications of Dex's information. If Grievous takes Bothoid despite its existing defenses, the Republic will be crippled. Without the Bothan Information Network, we'd have lost Christophsis as well. The clone intelligence units should promise, but we have only a handful of them, and the Jedi aren't spies. The trouble was, nobody knew where Grievous was at this moment. Heading for Bothoid? How helpful was that? Dooku's blunt instrument and his droid army could approach the Bothan system from half a dozen different hyperlanes, and the Jedi had no hope of patrolling them all. Even so early in the campaign against the Separatists, the Republic's clone army was already stretched thin. Kamino couldn't speed up clone production because the quality of the troops it created, that crucial edge, depended on slower maturation. We need more intelligence. If for no other reason than Dex's warning was so vague. That frightened him too. Because what if the Council didn't believe it? What if Dex's lack of specific detail meant they discarded the informant as unreliable? Did he carry enough weight with them that they would trust him as implicitly as he trusted Dex? Or would they demand that he return to his friend and pressure him until his source was revealed, so she could be apprehended and interviewed? Please, no, not that, he thought. I couldn't do it. I'd be betraying him. Please, let them trust me. Let them not ask me to do that. The trouble was, with Yoda, one never knew precisely what he'd ask. The Order's most venerable master was as much a maverick in his own way as Qui-Gon had ever been, and 1,000 times less predictable. One moment kindly and comfortable, a friend. The next, a coldly implacable and ruthless taskmaster. And the shift from one to the other could happen within the blink of an eye. I'll just have to convince them. I'll have to make them believe. He could see the temple now in the distance, so beautiful in the bright sun. Despite everything, he felt the familiar catch in his throat that told him, "You're nearly home." Not a Jedi-like emotion, but he was quite sure he wasn't the only one who felt it on first catching sight of those four splendid soaring spires and the dominant central tower. Now he was racing through the administration sector, between rows and rows of offices housing the thousands of workers who helped keep the ponderous wheels of the Republic turning. That was when he felt it. A violent tremor in the Force, a lightning strike of dark emotion, terror and hatred and triumph and rage, abrupt, annihilating. It seemed to come from nowhere. And then, the explosions. The light came first. A bright blossoming of scarlet and orange edged in black. Directly below him. Off to his left, then his right. Straight ahead. Next came the shockwaves, as though an invisible hand had seized the air and shaken it like a blanket. The waves blasted over him in scorching roils of heat, flinging his city bike end over end. Last of all, the dreadful sound. A deep and rolling boom, 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 boom. The echoes multiplying and magnifying as they bounced from building to swaying, shuddering, disintegrating building. And suddenly, the bright Coruscant sky was full of metal debris and bodies of airspeeders and maxi-taxis and gracious air gondolas tossed like leaves in an unforgiving storm. Helplessly tumbling, Obi-Wan summoned the Force and wrenched his city bike aside just in time to avoid a burning two-seater and was struck from behind by an out-of-control speeder bus laden with screaming passengers. Pain. Surprise. A detached and baffled anger. This can't be right. No, no, this is wrong. Yet still, he was falling. And falling. And...
Chapter 6.
More chi-chis, my darling?
Anakin looked at the stemful of luscious purple berries Padme was dangling so tantalizingly above his lips. He said, then flung his arms around her. I can think of something tastier than chi-chi berries.
Squealing with laughter, she let him tumble her to the sheets, mock protesting as his embrace crushed the fragrant fruit against her skin. didn't protest at all as he savored the sticky juice, the fragrance of her, let himself fall headfirst into their shared, secret passion. My love, my love, my own true love. Only when he was with her did the ache in his heart ease. Padme made sense of his life. Without her, all was chaos, violence, the agony of loss. Sometimes, often, he marveled that Obi-Wan never suspected anything. How could he love Padme so greedily, yet keep that devouring love hidden from the man who knew him best? I guess I really am a powerful Jedi, he thought. He muttered a protest as Padme pressed her palms to his chest, holding him back.
Wait, wait!
Don't want to wait, he muttered. You made me wait yesterday. I waited too long. She laughed, but didn't drop her hands.
Anakin, seriously, there's nothing I'd like more than to stay here with you all day, but I can't. I have a holoconference conference with Queen Jamilia in less than an hour. And don't you have an apprentice to train?
I am training her, he protested. I've given her instructions and she's following them without question. That's very important training for a Padawan. She pulled a mocking face.
Very important training I think you neglected.
Well, that's not fair, he said, though he had to grin. I only ever disobeyed Obi-Wan when he was wrong.
Apparently he was wrong a lot, she retorted, then giggled. I wonder if your apprentice will hold the same opinion of you.
She'd better not, he said. Not if she knows what's good for her anyway.
Ooh, so stern. Such a taskmaster you are, Master Skywalker.
There was that unlikely title again. Except he didn't mind it so much when Padme used it. He didn't mind anything when they were together. With a regretful sigh, she kissed him softly on the lips, then slid from the bed.
I'm sorry, Anakin, but I do have to go.
He loved her in every way, but best like this. Eyes sparkling, cheeks flushed, hair riotously tousled around her slender shoulders, framing the heart-stopping perfection of her face. She was so many women, it was hard to keep track. The regal queen, the feisty senator, the fierce champion of peace. My wife. He only had to look at her, and the burden of guilt he felt about living this lie, deceiving Obi-Wan, betraying the vows he'd taken with such solemn intent, eased almost to vanishing.
Because this is right, he thought. We belong together.
Grudgingly, he sat up. Yes, you have to go, and so do I. If I return to the temple too much later, Ahsoka will start a panic looking for me. And that's the last thing either of us needs. The brilliance of Padme's eyes dimmed a little. She rarely spoke of it, but he knew their secret burdened her, too. Even though she swore she had no regrets. Even though she'd felt no more compunction than he had in breaking the Jedi's uncompromising code.
It's knowing they're wrong and being unable to shout it from the top of the temple's spires. That's what's hard, he thought. It's having to hide and pretend and only live half a life together. But it won't last forever. When the war is over, we'll come out of the shadows. When the war is over, everything will change.
What? She said, frowning. You look so serious all of a sudden. He bounced to his feet.
Indigestion, he said. Race you to the shower.
Afterward, dressed and almost ready to take his reluctant leave of her, he stood on her apartment's veranda, watching the hypnotic crisscrossing of traffic. There was something almost soothing in the steady, ceaseless movement. It had taken him a long time to get used to Coruscant. As a child, he'd missed the desert terribly, missed its silence, its stillness, the breathtaking sweep of stars overhead. He'd dreamed so often of visiting them, setting foot on other worlds, a free boy, a free man, a Jedi. That dream came true, he thought. Others will come true, too. Good dreams, not just bad. The future's mine to make.
Across the cityscape, dominating the skyline, the Jedi Temple. Padme thought he didn't know how often she stood on this very same spot and looked toward it, thinking of him, longing for him. He did. Every time she thought of him, he felt it. Every tear she shed for their separation, he wept too. There was nothing she could feel that he couldn't, didn't feel with her.
And that's what Obi-Wan will never understand, Anakin thought. He thinks love can be discarded like an empty cup. He thinks that it will pass in time. He's a blind man saying that sight doesn't matter. He felt Padme behind him and turned, smiling. She was wearing her senator face now, all laughing softness put away, that intoxicating fall of hair smoothed into neat discipline. The seductive silk robe had been replaced by a severely formal dark green dress that hid her completely, just as his Jedi tunic and leggings hid him. Turned them into symbols, stole their individuality. But we are more than what we appear to be, both of us, he thought. And what we have here together makes us better, stronger, invincible. When will I see you again? She asked, smoothing his arm. Tonight? I have a dinner with the Malastarian Cultural Commissioner, but afterward? He kissed her forehead.
A dinner? My condolences. Political talk fests like that are so...
A stirring in the Force. A dark premonition. Tedious? She suggested and laughed. Yes, but... He pressed his fingers to her lips. Hush, hush, Padme. There's something not right. Terror and hatred and triumph and rage. A flash of light, gouts of flame, a shocking series of booms. Traffic erupting, spinning, impacting, and cutting through the chaos, through the maelstrom in the Force. Obi-Wan! As he tried to breathe, tried to calm his mind enough so he could find his master, his friend, Padme ran to the farthest edge of the veranda and stared at the pluming smoke, the leaping fires, four separate explosions somewhere close by. The administration sector, she said, her voice taut. The central court, the court of appeals, and I think the Senate overflow offices. She spun about. Obi-Wan? Shaken, he nodded. He's hurt, Padme. I have to go. I have to. Yes, yes, go, she urged him. I must go too. I must get to the Senate. I'll be needed. Anakin. Oh, Mistress Padme, Mistress Padme, cried C-3PO, tottering outside. What's happening? Is it the Separatists? Are we under attack? She ignored the droid, her face white. Go, Anakin. Be careful. You too. Then she was running to the open doorway, and he was leaping for his airspeeder. Their outstretched fingertips touched in passing. My love, he thought. He fired up the vehicle's engine and wrenched away from the veranda, heedless of rules, of safety, of everything but the overriding need to reach Obi-Wan. He's not dead, he thought. He can't be. I'd know if he was dead. Scant minutes had passed since the first explosion, and now the city of Coruscant was reacting. The sky was full of halted and halting traffic, strident with the sound of sirens screaming. Emergency vehicles converged on the blast locations from every direction. Air ambulances and security and traffic control and disaster crews. He could see debris scattered and floating, the remains of ruined maxi buses and airspeeders and alike, their repulsor lift units still working. The air was hazed and stinking with smoke, and almost lost within the racket of the sirens, desperate, pain-filled cries of the people injured in this cowardly attack. Anakin closed his ears and heart to them, narrowed his focus until he could hear only one voice, feel only one jagged, thrumming presence in the Force. Hang on, Obi-Wan. Don't let go. Don't you dare. It was the race to find and save his mother all over again. He could feel Obi-Wan's pain, his semi-conscious confusion, his fear. It shouted through the Force at him, scraping his nerves raw, waking his own fears, his own terror of loss. It summoned him like a beacon, like a bonfire in the night. An emergency services shuttle dropped out of the sky beside him.
All Coruscant traffic is in emergency lockdown,
a metallic voice blared.
You are ordered to power down your airspeeder. Repeat, power down your airspeeder or face arrest.
Incredulous, Anakin stared at the pilot. What? Okay, it was possible there was a problem with his shuttle's transponder, but was this guy blind? Couldn't he see he was shouting at a Jedi?
This is your final warning. Power down your airspeeder.
No, apparently not. One hand on the controls, not lessening his speed, he unclipped his lightsaber, flicked it into life, and brandished it over his head.
Transponder signal confirmed. Apologies, Master Jedi.
Yeah, no problem, he thought. See you later, Poodoo.
On a deep breath, heart pounding, Anakin plunged his airspeeder nose first toward the distant ground. Obi-Wan's presence was weakening, fading. The outline of his spirit was starting to blur. No, no, I will not let this happen. Oblivious to the organized mayhem surrounding him, the destruction, the teeming emergency responders and their blaring horns and amplified voices, he flew like a blaster bolt to Obi-Wan. The stinking smoke was really bad now, thick and choking. It was harder to see, but he didn't need eyes. He had the Force. It guided him lower, prompted him to slow down, slow down, slow down again. To nudge his way left, more left, just a little more left. There. An open rooftop, uncluttered. A few garden boxes, a fountain. Some kind of office retreat. Low benches, shade cloths, a single shuttle pad. And there, a broken city bike. Beside it, a broken Jedi.
Obi-Wan, a city bike? What were you thinking?
Anakin dropped his airspeeder to the rooftop as though it were a brick. Force leapt from the driver's seat to land kneeling by his former master's side.
Obi-Wan, it's me. It's Anakin. Don't move.
So much blood. Too much blood. Jedi weren't immortal. Qui-Gon had told him that, then died to prove it. Lying in a crumpled heap, awkwardly twisted, half on his side, Obi-Wan blinked slowly. His eyes were clouded, unfocused. His right cheek was deeply split along the bone.
Anakin!
Anakin leaned closer, too afraid to touch Obi-Wan's burned, blood-stained hand.
Don't talk. I'm going to call for help, okay? Anakin.
I'm right here, he said, even as he stood and backed away to the airspeeder for his comlink.
Don't worry, Obi-Wan. I'm right here.
Obi-Wan groaned.
Blast! I think I'm hurt.
No kidding. Anakin cued the comlink to the temple's emergency frequency and activated it.
This is Anakin Skywalker. I need Master Yoda.
A mushy hiss, then,
Master Yoda is in an emergency council session and cannot be...
Get him now, you idiot! Do you hear me? Get him now!
Sprawled on the rooftop, Obi-Wan stirred.
Temper, temper, Anakin. No need to shout.
Somehow, though it nearly killed him, Anakin managed to smile.
Don't be a spoilsport, Master. You know I like to throw my weight around.
Obi-Wan exhaled, faintly smiling in return, and red froth bubbled along his pale lips. Seeing it, Anakin returned to his side.
Anyway, I told you to be quiet, he scolded, kneeling. I think it's about time you started listening to me. Don't be bossy, said Obi-Wan.
Tried to move, gasped, and lay totally still.
There was an explosion.
There were four, said Anakin. Please, Obi-Wan, shut up.
I think I've broken something,
said Obi-Wan, his gaze restless.
No, make that several somethings.
He glanced down at his charred, torn, blood-soaked tunic.
Well, that's not good.
Anakin reached out a hand, risked touching it to Obi-Wan's forehead. His skin was ice cold.
You're fine, Master. You're going to be fine.
Anakin Skywalker, Master Yoda, this is.
Flooded with relief, he lifted the comlink.
Master Yoda, I need help. I'm with Obi-Wan.
He's hurt. He's really hurt. The attack.
Bring him to the temple, can you?
No, I don't dare move him. I need a healer. I need lots of healers. Can you come? Can you hurry?
Where are you, young Skywalker?
Anakin stared around him.
I don't know. The administration sector, on a rooftop.
Your comlink, leave open. Find you, we will.
Yes, good. Now hurry, please.
He clipped his comlink to his belt and took a deep breath. Sweat stung his eyes, slicked his spine. Fear gibbered round the edges of his mind.
Liar, whispered Obi-Wan. You said I was fine.
And you will be, Anakin said fiercely. But Obi-Wan, you need to save your strength.
Yes,
said Obi-Wan, his gaze now curiously introspective.
Yes.
Not for the first time, Anakin cursed his lack of healing talents. How could he be the chosen one and be so hopeless when it came to healing? It wasn't fair.
Anakin,
Despairing, Anakin stared at Obi-Wan's sickly white face. What could be seen of it that wasn't bathed in blood? There was blood in his beard from the awful wound in his cheek, that bloody froth drying on his lips. He was damaged inside, must be. What if he stopped breathing before Yoda could reach them? What if he went into convulsions? There'd been a pod race crash once, a real messy pileup on the home straight. Larbo Nellik had been thrown clear, thrown right into the barrier, broke herself to pieces, then convulsed and died as Anakin watched. His mother had wept, seeing it, and begged him not to race again. But Watto was the boss of things like that, and anyway, he loved it.
Anakin, Obi-Wan said again. Listen.
Anakin leaned even closer. No, you listen. Yoda's coming with healers. You have to stay quiet. You have to...
Anakin,
said Obi-Wan, his voice so weak.
It's important.
He looked down at Obi-Wan, fighting outraged disbelief. How could this be happening? How could he be on this rooftop, surrounded by debris, by the wailing of sirens, choking on bitter smoke, bitter tears, staring at his dreadfully injured friend, when only moments ago he'd been in Padme's arms, and laughing, loving?
This isn't happening, he thought. This can't be happening. Anakin,
said Obi-Wan. His voice was almost too faint to hear.
Tell Yoda that Dex's message was about Grievous. He's after Bothawi.
That shocked him.
Bothawi? No! If Grievous gets Bothawi...
I know,
said Obi-Wan painfully.
Anakin, tell Yoda.
You can tell him yourself as soon as he gets here. Obi-Wan looked at him, almost puzzled.
I'm not sure.
His eyes drifted closed, and fresh red froth bubbled onto his lips. Anakin slewed about, searching the crowded, smoky sky for Yoda. 10 years of rigorous Jedi training were all that stood now between him and screaming.
Come on, come on, where are you? Come on!
And just when he was on the brink of risking everything, risking Obi-Wan's life by putting him in the airspeeder and heading to the temple himself, Yoda and a team of 3 healers arrived. One of them was Master Vokara Che, who'd worked so hard on Anakin after Geonosis.
Stand back, young Skywalker,
Yoda commanded as the healers set about saving Obi-Wan's life.
Done well you have. Die he will not.
There were tears on Anakin's cheeks. He could feel them. He wasn't ashamed. He wasn't going to apologize to anyone, not even Yoda, for caring enough about Obi-Wan to weep for him. But it seemed Yoda was in a forgiving mood.
Die he will not,
he repeated, and to emphasize the assertion, rapped his gimmer stick on the rooftop.
How do you know?
It is not his time, said Yoda softly. Despite the dark side, see that much I can.
Shivering now, the shock setting in, Anakin felt his legs give way. He dropped to the rooftop, dazed.
He gave me a message for you, Master Yoda.
Grievous is after Bothawi.
Bothawi?
Said Yoda. And then he said something else in a strange tongue, not Republic Basic. He sounded perturbed.
Certain you are. No mistake there can be.
He shook his head. None. The healers were clustered about Obi-Wan, everything about them urgent. Vokara Che murmured something. The other two nodded, and then in one swift, coordinated move, they turned Obi-Wan fully onto his back. He cried out as they shifted him, a shout of terrible pain.
Master Vokara Che,
Yoda said loudly. The healer turned, her twin headtails writhing with her agitation.
Master Yoda, I'm sorry, but can you give me a...
Return to the temple at once, I must,
said Yoda.
Leave you here to help Obi-Wan, I will. When returned to the temple you are, and news of him you have, find me.
Vokara Che nodded.
Of course.
Anakin flinched as Yoda poked him with the gimmer stick.
Your airspeeder, that is, young Skywalker?
Yes, Master.
Then back to the temple you will take me, and attention to the speed laws you will not pay.
He didn't want to go. He wanted to stay here with Obi-Wan. He scrambled to his feet.
Yes, Master,
he said, but he was staring at his friend. Yoda poked him again.
Trust me, do you, youngling?
Startled, Anakin looked down.
What?
Yes. Then safe it is to leave, Obi-Wan. Not safe is Bothawi.
Obi-Wan would tell him to go. Obi-Wan would be furious if he lingered, endangering lives. He and Yoda returned to the temple. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, previously plain Senator Palpatine, for the better part of his life, Darth Sidious, Dark Lord of the Sith, stood pensively in his luxurious office, benevolently smiling at the mayhem he had wrought. Well, not personally. He wasn't the one who personally found the willing dupes, stirred up their real and imagined grievances against the Republic, supplied them with the explosives and the codes required to evade security, and left them to get on with things. No, that was the tedious footwork of some minion or other, some other willing dupe cousined by his useful, if elderly, apprentice Darth Tyrannus. The one keeping a seat warm for Anakin, who was ripening so nicely, really coming along. There was something so satisfying about a plan brought to fruition. In the cocooned hush of his office, it wasn't possible to hear the sirens, the screaming, the shouting, the horror. But he didn't need to hear it. He could see it and feel it in the Force. The dark side was a wonderful thing. He glanced away from the fruits of his daydreaming to the chrono on his desk. Ah, nearly time. Turning from the vast transperisteel window, from the panorama of death he'd painted with such skill, he retrieved his dark hooded cloak from his private wardrobe, slid into it, and activated the narrow band holo transceiver he kept for these special occasions.
Master, said Dooku's hologram, bowing.
Really, the man should be kneeling, but age did have its compensations, at least for a little while.
You are aware of our most recent success?
Yes, Darth Tyrannus, Sidious replied. I've been watching events unfold with some interest. Well done.
Praise from a Sith Lord was rare, and Dooku let his surprise show.
My lord, you humble me.
And you bore me, he thought. But let us not go into that. Not yet. How stand matters with General Grievous?
He assembles his renewed droid army now, my lord. He's anxious to engage the Jedi in battle once again.
The point of this mission is that he not engage the Jedi, Tyrannus. Not until Bothawi lies firmly in his grasp. Once Bothawi has fallen to us, they will expend themselves thoughtlessly in the attempt to reclaim it. We seek the deaths of many Jedi, Tyrannus. Remind Grievous of that. Remind him he is hardly indispensable.
Dooku bowed again.
My lord, I will.
Darth Sidious disconnected the hololink, returned the transceiver to his cloak's pocket, and the cloak to its hanger in the wardrobe. He liked to keep his possessions neat and tidy. A place for everything, and everything in its place. His desk holopad beeped, and he toggled its switch.
What is it?
Mos Amita's hologram bowed.
My lord, word has reached me that Obi-Wan Kenobi was injured in one of the terrorist attacks.
Obi-Wan, really? Don't say terrorists, Mos Amita. It's such a partisan, emotional word. Leave words like that to our redoubtable friends in the Holonet News Service.
Mos Amita nodded.
My lord.
Darth Sidious looked down, his thoughts seething. The gesture was a dismissal, and Mos Amita knew it. The hololink disconnected. Unobserved once more, he looked up, knowing a red light gleamed in his eyes.
Obi-Wan injured. That upright, sanctimonious, inconvenient Jedi injured,
he thought.
good.
He slid himself beneath the surface of the everyday, submerging his mind in the peerless currents of the dark side. Where was Anakin? What was he feeling? Grief, fear, anger, guilt.
Excellent.
Would Kenobi die? No. No, which was sad, but this turn of events was certainly serendipitous. Something could be made of it, surely. Something useful. Something permanent. For it was time, and more than time, that Anakin was weaned from Kenobi and his milkish, light-side pap. Time he truly began to sup upon the dark. Sitting back, fingers steepled, Darth Sidious began to explore the possibilities. Anakin wanted to go straight to the temple's halls of healing and wait there for Obi-Wan to arrive. He'd given Yoda Obi-Wan's message. What further use could the Council have for Anakin Skywalker? None. But Obi-Wan needed him. Even unconscious, he'd know his former Padawan was with him. Just as he'd known, stupefied after his disastrous duel with Dooku, that Obi-Wan and Padme had him safe between them. But Yoda wouldn't hear of it.
A healer you are not, young Skywalker. Report to the Council you must.
He decreed in that overbearing, irritating, pompous way of his, making pronouncements that everyone was supposed to accept without question just because he'd lived a long time. A full council session was convened, every master in attendance, although three-quarters of their complement appeared as holograms. Ki-Adi Mundi was so far away, almost to the very edge of the civilized galaxy near Barab 1, investigating some rumor of trouble, that his hologram was little more than a shadow, his voice a whisper.
"Tell the council, Anakin, what Master Kenobi told you,"
said Yoda, eyes half-lidded and deceptively mild. Anakin was able to control his anger just. This was pointless, a waste of his time. "Yes, Master Yoda." He swept the council with an impatient look. "Obi-Wan told me that Grievous plans to attack Bothawi."
"Grievous?"
said Adi Gallia, as beautiful in a hologram as she was in the flesh.
"You're certain?"
"What, you think I'm making this up?" he demanded. "Yes, Grievous, that's what he said." Again, he swept the council with a look, harsher this time. "And I don't care how crazy it sounds, you have to believe him. He was in agony, and all he cared about was making sure Master Yoda got the message. The message came from Dex, that means it's the truth. Grievous is planning to invade Bothawi."
"It means," said Eeth Koth, his hologram wavering, "that Obi-Wan thinks it is the truth, young Skywalker. Your former master could be mistaken. Or misled."
Anakin could never look at the Zabrak Master without a shiver of distaste, without seeing superimposed over him the menacing red and black Sith who'd murdered Qui-Gon. Even though he'd only glimpsed that dreadful face once in the hangar on Naboo, he'd never forgotten it. "Mistaken?" he echoed, not caring anymore if his anger showed. "I don't think so. As for Dex, he'd never lie to Obi-Wan." A glum silence told him he'd scored a point. At last. "Thank you, Anakin," said Master Windu heavily. "The Council will deliberate in private now. You're excused." Anakin looked at Yoda. "I have your permission to..."
"Yes,"
said Yoda.
"Return to the temple, Obi-Wan should now be. Tell Master Vokara Che that to see her I will come when I am able."
Anakin nodded. "Yes, Master Yoda." Added grudgingly, "Thank you." As he reached the council chamber door, Mace Windu's voice made him pause. "The Force is with him, Anakin. You are wrong to be afraid." "Yeah, yeah, wrong to be afraid, wrong to be worried, wrong to care two bantha pats what happened to Obi-Wan." "Everything I do is wrong," he thought. "But you still expect me to save you, don't you?" "Yes, Master Windu," he said over his shoulder, and kept on walking.
"Sky Guy! Sky Guy, hold up! Wait for me!"
He spun on his heel to see Ahsoka racing across the meditation level concourse toward him.
"Don't call me that,"
he snapped when she was only a handful of paces distant. "I'm Master Skywalker to you, or just plain Master." As though he'd physically slapped her, she skidded to a halt.
Slight, wiry, such a little thing. She stared up at him in shocked silence.
I'm sorry,
she said at last in a small, wounded voice.
I only meant...
She dropped her gaze.
I'm sorry.
Unfortunately, they weren't alone on the concourse. The Jedi and Padawans entering and exiting the nearby swift tubes did not stop or stare, but Anakin could feel their curiosity. 10 years in this place, and still he was an object of interest, of speculation. All their hopes and dreams hanging on him like decorations on a Bantha skeleton at Bunta Eve. He hated it. What do you want, Ahsoka? He said roughly. I don't have time to look at yesterday's training session.
I heard Master Obi-Wan was hurt in one of the explosions,
she whispered.
I thought... I felt...
What? She was trembling.
You're frightened for him, and I wanted to... I thought you might, like...
She turned away, defeated.
It doesn't matter.
Her pain knifed through him. He felt stupid and cruel. Ahsoka, wait. Reluctantly, she turned back. You're right, he said. I am frightened for Obi-Wan. I shouldn't be, but I am. And I would like some company while I wait to see him. Not her company. He was desperate for Padme. But that was impossible. Ahsoka would do in a pinch.
Yes?
Ahsoka's face lit up with joy.
You mean it?
He wasn't sure how he felt about that, having so much easy power over one young girl. Why did she care so much? Why should what he said matter? Qui-Gon mattered to me, he thought. I suppose it's the same. He jerked his head toward the swift tubes. Come on, we can work through your training session while we wait. Don't suppose you thought to bring that droid cam? She smiled, a sharp flash of feral teeth.
Of course I did, Sky... Master, I know I'm thick sometimes, but...
He sighed. You're not thick, Ahsoka, and I guess you can call me Sky Guy, but only when we're alone. Her face lit up again, so much unbridled joy.
Thank you!
He didn't want her gratitude. He didn't want her as his Padawan, though he liked her well enough. He didn't want any Padawan. But thanks to the Council, they were stuck with each other. All they could do was make the most of the fact. Come on, he said again and walked away. With a gasp and a skip, she hurried after him. Chapter 7 Senator Amidala! Padme turned at the sound of Bail Organa's voice. He was pushing his way toward her through the crowded corridor, collecting stares and rude comments, which he ignored. They'd been called to an emergency session of the Security Committee. The terrorist attacks. The Senate complex was like a poked beehive, frantic with activity. Padme, he said as he reached her, then pulled her aside into a convenient alcove. His dark eyes were anxious. I don't know if you've heard, but Obi-Wan Kenobi is one of the bombing's casualties. The lies came so easily now.
No, I didn't. Oh, that's awful, Bail. How badly is he hurt?
He's not dead, but I'm told it's serious. I'm sorry, I know your friends. Well, she wouldn't precisely call them that, not since she'd ignored his plea and promptly married the man he'd begged her to renounce.
Friends, yes, Bail, how did you find out? There's been no announcement.
The Jedi shuttle taking him back to the temple got caught at an emergency checkpoint. The sister of one of my Senate staffers is a security officer. She flew escort for it once the problem was resolved. He shrugged. And sisters gossip. They certainly did.
I want to know everything you know, but it'll have to wait till after the briefing, which we should get to before we're late.
Bail nodded. Of course. When they reached their allotted chamber, though, they found it empty, save for Supreme Chancellor Palpatine.
Don't be alarmed, my friends,
he said as they slowed uncertainly on the chamber's threshold.
You're in the right place, but I took the liberty of canceling your briefing.
Padme exchanged a cautious glance with Bail, who stepped forward. Chancellor?
I wish to personally inspect the damage inflicted upon us by the Separatists, said Palpatine. And I'd like both of you to accompany me. No fanfare, no elaborate escort, just 3 concerned public servants united in a common cause.
Padme frowned.
I'll come, of course, but...
Why you?
Palpatine smiled gravely.
Because I value your advice, m'lady. Your experiences as a target of Trade Federation terrorism, first on Naboo, and then more recently here and on Geonosis, afford you valuable insight. You've looked firsthand into that dreadful abyss, Padme. It has tried to devour you and failed every time. I want to see these attacks through your eyes. You will see things I never would or could. And if I'm to protect our great republic, I must know what they are. No matter how alarming or upsetting that may be.
Taken aback, she nodded.
Anything I can do to help?
And as for you, Senator Organa,
Palpatine continued,
if you'll forgive my blunt speaking, I have felt of late that you're coming to regret the unconditional support you've shown my office.
Regret? Bail shook his head vehement. No, Supreme Chancellor. I support you without reservation, as always.
Do you? Said Palpatine gently. I must say that's not the impression I've received.
With respect, sir, you're mistaken. If I have regrets, it's that we've been forced into this war. That in creating our Grand Army of the Republic, we've turned our backs on 1,000 years of peace, on all the senators who came before us and preserved that peace by steadfastly refusing to give in to their fears.
Are you saying my negotiations for an equitable settlement with the Separatists were not genuine?
No, of course I'm not. Bail ran a hand over his close-clipped goatee. Nobody could have tried harder than you did to give Dooku and his cronies what they wanted while still preserving the integrity of the Republic. It's just
that now you've seen soldiers killing and dying, said Palpatine. Clones, to be sure, but even so. Am I correct?
Bail nodded.
Yes.
And you wonder if you did the right thing agreeing to support a Republic army? Especially since your dear friend here, Senator Amidala, opposed the Military Creation Act at the risk of her own life.
It was never that I disagreed with your stand, Padme, said Bail, looking at her. Not in principle. It was only that I feared...
I was being naive?
She shrugged.
I know that. And perhaps I was. Certainly I'd be a hypocrite now, wouldn't I, to complain about the army when it saved my life.
As well as lives on every planet the Separatists now wish to rip from the Republic by force, Palpatine added. Including, it would seem, Coruscant itself. This is why I want you with me, Bail, so you can see what we're fighting for. Your scruples are worthy, but are they worth innocent lives? Come, I have an airspeeder waiting for us.
There was no question of declining Palpatine's invitation. Padme nodded at Bail, then fell into step beside him to follow Palpatine out of the committee chamber's rarely used executive exit. As they made their way through a labyrinth of corridors to his private shuttle bay, the Supreme Chancellor beckoned her to his side.
I wonder if you've heard about our good friend Master Kenobi.
Yes, Chancellor. Do you know how he is?
Alas, no, said Palpatine. I spoke briefly with Master Yoda a short time ago, and all he could tell me was that the temple's healers were doing their best.
She nodded.
I see. Oh, Anakin, she thought.
Then she said,
but did Master Yoda at least sound hopeful?
Hopeful? Said Palpatine. I'm afraid I can't say, my dear. Mostly he sounded like Master Yoda. Convoluted and inscrutable. Still...
He patted her shoulder.
The temple's healers did a splendid job with young Anakin. We must have faith they can do the same for Master Kenobi.
Padme nodded again, feeling numb.
Yes, we must.
Palpatine sighed.
I can only imagine how poor Anakin is feeling, he said, his voice catching. He's terribly fond of Master Kenobi, you know, even though our esteemed Jedi friend is so frequently disapproving. I do wish there was something I could do for him, find a way to ease his pain. For you know, as much as I respect and admire the Jedi, Padme, at times their insistence on emotional detachment almost seems, well, unkind. And Anakin, my goodness, he's not like other Jedi, is he? He's far more sensitive, more easily hurt. He needs people who love him, people whom he knows care for him. Not despite his passionate nature, but because of it.
He sighed again.
At least knowing him as I do from such a young age, that's what I believe. But then, I'm not a Jedi.
It was a moment before she could trust herself to speak. However strange and difficult their ways seem to us, Chancellor, I'm sure the Jedi believe that what they're doing is right.
Oh, I'm sure, too, said Palpatine. But I wonder how many ill things are done by those who believe that what they're doing is right. Ah, here we are.
They'd reached their destination at last. Palpatine's discreet and private shuttle bay. Padme breathed a sigh of relief, grateful for the distraction.
But at least I'm not the only one who realizes Anakin will be upset, she thought. At least Palpatine is allowed to be his friend. Perhaps he can help Anakin until we see each other again.
The Supreme Chancellor led the way onto the shuttle platform, dismissing the waiting guard with a nod. The first thing she noticed was the lack of crisscrossing traffic. Startled, she halted. She'd never seen Coruscant skies empty before.
Yes, said Palpatine softly. A sobering sight, isn't it?
It certainly was. Almost unnatural.
And you're quite sure we don't need to extend the no-fly zone past the senatorial and administration sectors?
As sure as I can be, said Palpatine. What do you think, Senator Organa?
Bail was frowning at the lonely buildings before them. I think the disruption we have is more than enough victory granted to the terrorists, Supreme Chancellor. And the faster we can get the traffic moving again, the greater damage we do to their confidence. Palpatine patted him on the shoulder.
Ah, my sentiments exactly.
Docked in front of them was a sleek, dark crimson open airspeeder, a four-seater, understated but with a whisper of power about it. Nimbly, for a man of his age, Palpatine slid into the driver's seat and looked at his guests expectantly.
You're going to fly us? Said Bail, comically surprised.
Sir, I can...
No, that won't be necessary, said Palpatine, waving aside his concern. Actually, I'm quite an accomplished pilot, and every so often I enjoy carting myself about the place. Not that this is a pleasure trip, obviously. But I'd like you both to concentrate on the results of the Separatists' attack.
Taking in their continued hesitation, he added,
Did you want to see my license? It is current, I promise. You'll be perfectly safe.
Padme grinned. She couldn't help it. Here was the Palpatine she remembered of old. Energetic, unexpected, with a sly sense of the ridiculous. She turned to Bail.
The Chancellor's right, Senator. We'll be quite safe. He won several cups for airspeeder racing back on Naboo.
He did? Said Bail, relaxing. I don't recall that being mentioned in the Senate.
Oh, yes, said Palpatine dryly. What a useful recommendation for my candidacy. Likes to drive dangerous machines very fast.
Well, if you do, Supreme Chancellor, you're not alone, said Bail. I've been known to break a speed limit myself once or twice. Palpatine's smile was conspiratorial.
And it shall remain our secret, my friend. Now, Senators, if you'd care to join me.
Gravely courteous, Bail let Padme go first. She settled herself in the rear of the speeder, and he settled in beside her, maintaining as polite a distance as possible given the snugness of the back seat. Palpatine touched a button on the console, and the airspeeder was immediately enveloped in a high-security transshield. Then he took hold of the control yoke and swooped them away from the shuttle port, away from the Senate building, and into the eerily subdued Coruscant sky. The airspeeder's transponder, identifying its pilot as the Republic's Supreme Chancellor, kept them comfortably free of interfering security personnel. With only a fraction of his attention needed for piloting, Palpatine let his senses weave around his passengers as they stared down at the city, nervously anticipating the destruction to come. Since surprising them in deep conversation the other day, after the Senate sitting, he'd begun to wonder if a problem wasn't developing. What he learned now was illuminating and alarming.
She loves Anakin, he thought. There's no question of it. She stinks of love for him. It's nauseating. Useful, but nauseating. But does she realize she's attracted to Organa? No, I don't think so. He's a friend. She admires him. Her heart belongs to Anakin. But Anakin will soon be torn from her. War will keep them apart. And male friends can sometimes become far more.
It was the mist danger, not even the hint of a hint. Hardly worth his consideration. But he hadn't achieved what he'd achieved by leaving anything to chance. The smallest suggestion of an impediment to his plans could not be ignored.
And what of this lump of a senator, this dull, worthy Bale? He's married, but his barren wife remains distant on Alderaan. He's an honorable dolt. He would never betray her, yet he has feelings for Naboo's brave little former queen. Respect and admiration are a dangerous mix. These senators work closely together, and that can make for fertile ground.
An interesting conundrum, then. On the one hand, there was Anakin, influenced by Kenobi, who stubbornly, inconveniently, refused to die. And on the other hand, his Padme, slavishly devoted, but at the same time vulnerable to the constant presence of Bail Organa.
Though she remained faithful, discontent and distance might start a rot. And Anakin is faithful, too. He rails against Kenobi, but would die for him in a blink.
The time had come to kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, no, said Anakin's wife, almost weeping. Oh, Bail, look, it's the central court complex. What's left of it?
Obligingly, Palpatine swooped the airspeeder groundward, affording them a closer view of the terrorists' bombs' most satisfying results. Not even transperisteel windows and duranium-reinforced outer walls had been able to withstand the powerful blasts. The judicial buildings were ruined, peeled apart like ripe tilly fruit. And the destruction didn't end there. Littered across the wide, spacious concourse was the twisted wreckage of airspeeders, gondolas, shuttles, and city bikes blown out of the sky and fallen groundward again in a bitter, bloody rain. Over there, in the main fountain, how delightful, an entire broken maxibus. Not even smoke damage and charring could disguise the spilled, splashed gore. The falling vehicles had further damaged the surrounding court buildings. Coruscant's judicial processes would be crippled for weeks, if not months. Tensions would rise, dissatisfaction would spread, cancerous, through the city's fragile fabric.
The more entrenched is a society in its comforts, its safe routines, the more easily it is disrupted. The more swiftly does it fall. Soft fools. They have no idea. The corruption of affluence has rotted them from the inside out.
Overwhelmed by the carnage, security had yet to take away all the bodies. They lay on the sidewalk, their horrors decently shrouded. How many dead, Supreme Chancellor? Organa asked, pathetically moved. How many injured? Do we have any idea of the final casualty tally?
Alas, Palpatine said, his voice mimicking sadness. That information is incomplete. But I think it's safe to say that we have lost more brothers and sisters today than our hearts can easily bear.
He engaged the airspeeder's hover mode, and they lingered above the destruction. Shifting in his seat, he watched Padme's tears brim and fall, silvering her cheeks. Watched Bail Organa take her hand, comforting, his own eyes slicked with angry grief. Never again, said Organa, jaw clenched. We cannot allow this to happen again. We have to find out how it happened at all.
That won't be easy, I'm afraid, the Supreme Chancellor said, shaking his head. Coruscant is such an open, unsuspecting society. We have always trusted one another. I fear we won't want to question that trust. I fear that in fearing to lose what makes us great, we'll leave ourselves open to more attacks like this one.
How were the Separatists able to bypass the security measures?
Padme whispered.
There are procedures in place, methods of detecting explosives and tracking questionable characters. We know we have enemies out there. How did they get so close to us?
Because, my dear Senator, we trusted too much, he replied. We made assumptions. We did not ask the right questions at the right time of the right people.
Organa dragged his bleak stare away from the destruction. You're saying we've been betrayed from within?
No, said Padme. No, I don't believe that. I won't believe it.
Palpatine released a heavy sigh.
I think we must consider it, m'lady. Painful as it may be, we must look at one another. Quietly, discreetly. We don't wish to start a panic. We certainly don't wish for the innocent to suffer. But under the circumstances, a little inconvenience, a little discomfort, cannot be considered an onerous sacrifice.
Spy on our own people? We can't, said Padme, revolted. Supreme Chancellor, what you're suggesting is the very antithesis of democratic rule.
He gestured down at the bodies, the ruin, the toiling personnel tasked with clearing up the mess.
Tell that to the widows and orphans created today, Padme, he said softly. Tell that to the husbands who must soon bury their wives, the parents who must say farewell to their precious children. Tell them justice is not as important as protecting our feelings.
Even distressed, she was beautiful.
We didn't resort to this on Naboo after the Trade Federation. We turned toward each other, not on each other.
He shrugged.
Coruscant is not Naboo, my dear. Find me another way and I shall pursue it with alacrity. Until then, my only duty is assuring that attacks like this never happen again.
He waited a moment for reality to sink in.
As the leading lights of the Security Committee, can I count on your support, Senators? Will you help me unmask the vile criminals responsible for such pain and ruin?
We don't have a choice, Padme, said Organa. He was still holding her hand. Realizing that, she pulled herself free.
You like this idea? You're comfortable with it?
Of course not. I hate it, he said fiercely.
And then he pointed through the transhield.
But I hate that more. It's the lesser of two evils, Senator. Just like the formation of the Republic's Grand Army, or making deals with the Hutts. It's the lesser of two evils, and to save lives, we'll have to live with it. And thus do the honorable weak cut their own throats.
Outwardly solemn, inwardly laughing, Palpatine disengaged the airspeeder's hover mode and proceeded to the next bomb site, just in case their resolve should falter.
So,
said Yoda, regarding Mace Windu with half-shuttered eyes.
Believe this Dexter Jetster, do you?
Cross-legged on the chamber's other meditation pad, Mace shook his head and sighed. Obi-Wan believes him.
And in Obi-Wan you believe?
Mace frowned. Don't you? It was Yoda's turn to sigh.
Yes.
Then what do you propose we do? What indeed, that was the question. The deliberations following Anakin's angry departure from the council chamber had been brief. Those absent masters, caught up in desperate missions of their own, had declared their faith in Yoda's judgment and swiftly withdrawn from the holoconference. The others present in the council chamber had echoed their support and also retired, leaving just himself and Mace Windu to make the final decision. Of them all, they were the most experienced in war, the best strategic thinkers. Of them all, they were closest to Palpatine, and guiding Palpatine during this crisis was one of the Jedi's greatest tasks.
Blunder blindly toward Grievous we must not, he said at last. A wily adversary he is, a creature steeped in malice and hatred. Stop at nothing he will to see us defeated. Slaughter tens of thousands to distract us from our goal he would.
Glumly they considered that.
Already, Grievous had proven himself capable of such a barbaric tactic. On a smaller scale so far, but its success had promised greater destruction to come. His battle droids had raised an entire township on Ord Mantell in order to divert Republic troops and so effect an escape. Stoic Ki Adimundi had wept reporting it. Wept for the fathers cut down without a chance. Wept for the murdered mothers with their babies in their arms. The problem with Grievous, the greatest challenge they faced, was that his army was devoid of emotion. Machines felt nothing. They could kill and kill and keep on killing and never sicken of the blood. It seems he has an endless supply of ships and battle droids, said Mace, grimacing. Clearly he and Dooku have been planning this war for months. Who knows, perhaps years. We're desperately playing catch-up while this self-styled general and his army stay three easy steps ahead of us at every turn.
Be careful, Yoda warned him sharply. Despair a Jedi should not feel.
Mace stared, startled. Then he nodded. Forgive me, Master. You're right. With everything that's happened, I was allowing myself to feel overwhelmed. Yoda considered him. Mace was courageous, often to the point of madness. Fierce, dedicated, disciplined, and obstinate in the face of defeat. To see him despondent was chilling.
Recover Obi-Wan will, Master Windu, he said. Dwell on his hurts you must not. Distractions we cannot afford. Not when Grievous we must defeat.
For a moment, Mace said nothing. Then he lifted his gaze. Don't you find it alarming that Obi-Wan wasn't able to sense trouble before the explosions? When was the last time you can remember a Jedi blindly walking into something like that? You can't. It doesn't happen, Yoda. Not without interference. Whoever this Darth Sidious is, whatever mask he wears to walk among us, his influence is growing. The confusion of the dark side is growing. It's spreading like poison. Obi-Wan Kenobi is one of our best, if he can't see clearly. Yoda said nothing. Students had to find their own way. I'm sorry, Yoda, Mace said at last. It's just... To the Jedi Knights and Padawans, even to the other Masters and Council members, I am the solemn and wise Mace Windu. Nothing disrupts my calm. No danger disturbs me. But I am a man as well as a Jedi. Here, alone with you, I can admit the truth. I must admit it. I am afraid.
Then release your fears, Mace Windu, Yoda retorted. You know the mantra. You know the truth. Fear leads to anger.
To hate, then to suffering, said Mace, nodding. It leaves us vulnerable to the dark side. Yes, I know. And I know I have to control my emotions, especially now with the dark side surrounding us. I am trying, Yoda. I am...
Ha!
Said Yoda, and slapped his meditation pad.
Do or do not.
There is no try. Mace finished with a wry smile. You're right. He rubbed a hand over his face. I'm weary. It's no excuse, but I am. He looked it. Ever since Geonosis, he had pushed himself to his limits, left those limits behind, and kept on brutally pushing. He felt the pain of every lost and wounded Jedi. Every Republic defeat was a stab wound through his heart. Despite his own severe self-discipline, Yoda worried for him.
If rest he does not, Yoda thought, kill him this war will without spilling a single drop of his blood. Your mentor I have been, Mace, he said gently. Your friend I am now. To your fears you must not surrender. The dark side this is attacking you. Fight it if you must. For need you we do. Need you I do. Defeat the dark side alone I cannot.
Mace breathed in deeply, then let out the breath in a slow, shuddering sigh. You're not alone, Yoda, and you never will be. I will never let the dark side win. He sat up straight, fresh purpose in his face. Grievous is a slippery customer. If we chase him, we're more likely to lose him. We're going to have to get him to come to us. If we blockade the Bothan system, broadcast our presence there. Yoda pursed his lips, considering that.
A lure you would make of our people?
It's risky, I know, said Mace. But Grievous is arrogant.
if we dare him to come after us.
Resist temptation he might not. A bold plan this is, Master Windu.
Bold and risky. But we've been on the defensive against him long enough. It's time we took the fight to him. More wry amusement lit Mace's strained face. Even if it's in a sneaky, backhanded way.
Made his move upon Bothui, Grievous has not,
Yoda murmured.
Ready to attack it, he might not yet be. Your plan could force his hand to our advantage.
Mace shook his head, his momentary enthusiasm dimming. The only problem is, we're already fighting separatist fires on two fronts. Our resources are at their limits. Yoda stroked his chin.
Three new cruisers at the shipyards of Alantine 6 there are.
Earmarked to patrol the mid-rim, yes, said Mace. Once Ki-Adi-Mundi comes home.
No. Deploy them instead to protect Bothui, we must.
Under whose command? Said Mace, frowning. Neither of us can go. We're needed here, and we can't spare anyone from their current campaigns. As for Obi-Wan, even with our best healers working on him, he won't be fit enough for at least... Sudden understanding dawned, and his spine snapped even straighter.
Anakin?
Yoda, I don't think so. He may be the chosen one, but that doesn't make him ready to command a battle group. Yoda swallowed a sigh. Mace might be right, but this was war. There was no such thing as the ideal time for a promotion.
Acquit himself well on Christophsis, young Skywalker did. Allow his past on Tatooine to interfere with his mission there, he did not. Matured, he has.
Mace snorted. I noticed precious little maturity in him when he spoke to the Council earlier.
Worry for Obi-Wan, that was. Disappoint us, Anakin Skywalker will not.
Mace unfolded from his meditation pad and restlessly paced the small chamber. Yoda, are you sure?
Sure?
Half-closing his eyes, Yoda sought in the Force for some sense of rightness about this decision. Fought his way past the pall of the dark side to the still light place wherein he'd dwelled most of his long, eventful life.
Sure of anything can anyone be in these troubled times?
He shook his head.
Right, I think I am. But before a final decision I make, speak to his former master I will.
Swinging around from the shaded window, Mace stared at him.
Now?
Yoda, he's not strong enough. You heard what Vokara Che said. He nearly died.
Nearly is nearly, Mace,
said Yoda, and with a grunt got to his feet.
Strong enough he will be. No, does Obi-Wan Kenobi, that desperate times these are.
Mace nodded slowly. It was almost a bow. Whatever you think is best, Master. There was no best about any of this. There was only what they could do at any given moment. Yoda summoned his hover chair and went to see Obi-Wan. Chapter 8. The aftermath of deep healing was an odd sensation. Floaty, disconnected, an almost unpleasant feeling of being adrift. There was pain, or an echo of pain, somewhere nearby. Hazy memories shifted behind his closed eyes, like cloud shadows dancing over an empty meadow.
Explosions. Flames leaping. Shock. An impact. Falling. Falling in slow motion. Watching the rooftop coming closer and closer. No hope of avoiding it. Oh dear, this is going to hurt rather a lot, isn't it? And then, darkness reaching for him, sucking him down, swallowing him alive. Death beckoning. No, no, not yet, not now. I'm too busy, another time.
Despite the pain, despite the drifting, he thrashed feebly on his rooftop. It felt soft now, which was wrong. And there was silence. That was wrong. Where were the sirens? Where was the screaming? Hadn't it been noisy?
Where am I?
He thought.
Be still you must, Obi-Wan, said an imperious, familiar voice. Or scolded by Master Vokara Che will you be.
His eyelids were dreadfully heavy. Someone had turned them to lead. But he found the strength to drag them open because Yoda was here. Wherever here was.
Master,
he whispered, and was shocked to hear his voice so thin, so insubstantial. Squinting against the mellow light, he let his gaze roam around him. Saw pale walls, a high ceiling, smelled sweet incense in the warm air. Nonsense resolved itself into sense.
Oh, that's right. I'm in the halls of healing. I was only here a few weeks ago, and now I'm back. How very inefficient of me.
Speak do not, Obi-Wan, said Yoda firmly in his hover chair by the bed. Listen instead.
Obi-Wan nodded cautiously. Something was niggling at him.